You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to El Tel and John's La Liga Weekly. Who else is missing the Nations League already? I certainly was when I was commentating on Germany playing with no actual striker against Belarus, Spain against the Faroe Islands. I wonder who might win. Sergio Ramos grew a long beard before leading his country into their Viking doubleheader. Sweden was seen off at last. Poor old Seb Larsson. That handball law is so hard to understand nowadays. I remember when players were allowed to block crosses with an arm flailing above their head. It's also confusing now. Meanwhile, in the tournament that no one understands, good teams actually play against other good teams. Congratulations to Portugal. All-time greats, or just a reboot of Greece 2004 with Cristiano as the new Angelos Charisteas. Of course, you'd rather hear about transfers than football. And we've had some actual deals done since we last recorded, with Real Madrid chucking money around like Manchester United, or at least Manchester United in the fevered imagination of tabloid journalists. The latest players linked with Old Trafford are Diego Maradona from 1986, Johan Cruyff, 1974, and Jan Oblak. Apparently, he's unhappy that Atletico might not be genuinely competing for the title and is considering going to Old Trafford. Someone's been sitting up watching Premier League years on Sky, thinking that Alex Ferguson's still there. Sassuolo have today announced that Kevin Prince Boateng won't be signing for Barcelona. You know what, guys? I think we'd guess that one all. We'll have a look at all of the transfers that have been done. We'll catch up with the managerial merry-go-round and speculate as to how many days Lopetegui will stay at Sevilla. Terry is just back, hot, rather wet, from watching Spain see off Sweden in the Euro qualifiers. He'd done both of the games, Terry. It was the second one was the better game, wasn't it? And I thought Spain did well. I mean, it was a long hour waiting for them to get that goal. Denied, ironically, the VAR would have saved them, and they've got VAR facilities in the Bernabeu, but they weren't allowed to use them because that's the competition rules. But I thought it was a good, creative Spain team. You could argue Rodrigo, Morata the other way around, maybe. I like that too. I thought they did well against, you know, a team that got to the World Cup quarterfinals last year.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. I think it's still a work in progress, but I have been fortunate to have done all four of their qualifiers so far. That's the hardest game they've had. That's the best they've played. I don't expect that to be the starting lineup for the next game. I think Luis Enrique, I know he's not on the bench. I know he's got issues to deal with, a family crisis that's ongoing. But I think he's looking right. It's a long game for him. I think he's looking at as many players as he possibly can. And they have got four wins out of four and in pole position now to qualify comfortably. That's probably their second hardest game in the group. The hardest will be against the same opponents, Sweden, away from home. So it couldn't be going better for Spain. But I think we have to remember that they do, in general, look really good in the qualifying process for all the competitions that they challenge for. Where they have fallen down has been when the actual competition comes round and they go into it on the back of good form. They are regarded as one of the favourites, but in the recent last three competitions, they've hugely disappointed. So I think we know by and large that Spain know how to qualify. They qualify in style. They've got lots and lots of really good footballers. Somehow Luis Enrique has to find 16 special players that fill up the bulk of his squad that genuinely have a chance of winning the competition. I think we're actually still quite a way away from them achieving that, but he certainly is looking at everybody he possibly can with regards to selecting that squad that goes into the Euros in 18 months' time.
How far away from a starting 11 in their first game next year would that starting 11 be today? Not a million miles away, would it?
No, I think the back four looks pretty much in place now, doesn't it? Carvajal, Ramos, Jordi Alba in particular. I think Inigo Martinez has done his cause no harm with the performances he's made. Hermoso, Diego Llorente appear to be the backup, providing competition for his place. The goalkeeper's hotting up in terms of competition. Kepa appears to be the selection at the moment, and I'm all for that. I think if Kepa's playing well, De Gea hasn't been playing particularly well for club and country, or his form has dipped, then there should be a challenge to his position. So I think Busquets plays in midfield. It's interesting enough that Parejo came in at the age of 30 and got his third cap. Busquets, people are saying that he's too old and over the hill. So yeah, those players are pretty much the same age. So that was quite interesting. Fabian Ruiz played well, grew into the game, got better as the game went on. And the one disappointing player for me would be Asensio again. And I look and it just frustrates me how good he has been when he first burst onto the scene at Espanyol and, of course, Real Madrid. And I don't think we're seeing the progress. I don't know whether it's because his performances at Real Madrid, he's been intermittent in and out of the team, but I think there's more to come, and his position will be under pressure, I think, from some of the other players that are in the squad. I'm not sure he knows that position when he's got an overlapping fullback and he's playing slightly more tucked in. And I thought when Oyarzabal came on, he actually knows that position better than Asensio. Isco, I still have frustrations where you play him. He's not a midfield player in a three. I wouldn't play him wide in a four. I wouldn't particularly play him wide in an attacking three. I think Isco's position is the number 10, the attacking midfield, playing behind two strikers. If that's the system you play, I think that's the system you have to play if you want to play Isco in that role. So I think they're getting there. It was great to see Oyarzabal come on. He's a player that not many people would have known that haven't watched Spanish football regularly in the last couple of seasons, but I think he's a genuine talent. And it's nice to see players from other clubs get opportunities. So we actually ended up the team with two Real Sociedad players playing, in Diego Llorente coming on, Oyarzabal coming on and scoring the goal, Valencia players playing their place. I think Morata probably, on his goals record for club and country, probably should be the main striker. I was slightly surprised that he didn't start in the game against Sweden, but he certainly made an impact when he came on. And it was pleasant to see, actually, Ramos give a player that I'm not sure he needs a goal. He got a couple of goals. He didn't score against the Faroe Islands, but he got the goals against Malta that made them win 2-0. But it was nice touch to see Ramos give him the ball and let him take the penalty. So it was all round, just what you'd expect. A lot of people, actually, funny enough, had Sweden down to be genuine, one or two people even described them as favourites, bearing in mind that Spain's recent form in the last competitions and been slightly underwhelming in the three games they've had so far in his qualifications. I didn't agree with that. I thought Spain at home in the Bernabeu with the players they had against a well-organised, well-coached Swedish team, to me it would have been a massive surprise if Spain hadn't won. So what I expected, just as I say, I think the one disappointment aspect would be the form of Marco Asensio.
This takes me back to a familiar theme, Terry, that I bang on about and upset people all the time. I think we read too much into big tournaments. Sweden got further than Spain in the World Cup, didn't they? And we were all, I wasn't, but a lot of people was, oh, well, Spain are terrible. It's a short tournament. It's all played over a few games. And we read it into it like it changes everything. Spain are clearly superior than Sweden. They've got better players, better players throughout. And, it showed, didn't it? They were just a much better team than them. Anyway, Nations League. I should have checked with you. I didn't check how much of this. Did you watch Nations League?
Watched the England-Netherlands game and I watched the Portugal-Netherlands game.
Right. Yes. Well, they're the ones. I didn't see England.
I missed the Switzerland-Portugal.
I was at a kids football tournament and it sounds like better entertainment, I think, I got than the Nations League. However, I do like the Nations League because it is good teams playing against good teams. And, you're playing against a team at your level. So for all of its complication, all people say, I don't understand it. Fair enough, it is complicated, but at least you're watching competitive games of football. So, first of all, Portugal, they're European champions. They're now Nations League champions. Are they good or are they just a really defensive, they've got some very good talented players and they play a really solid, I think quite defensively, and then just think, we'll just grab something because we've got good players up front. Nothing wrong with that. It's not cheating, is it?
No, exactly. I think that's what it is. A coach that knows how to get the best out of the team. They don't bang on about a philosophy and a style. They, I wouldn't even go as far to say they grind out wins. They have a special player in Ronaldo, got the hat-trick in the game against Switzerland. Bernardo Silva, I think for a while he was underestimated, but I think everybody now knows what a really talented player he is. They've changed, slight change in defensive players, but they still look exactly the same as when they won the Euros. So I think you made the point about we place an emphasis on how important that tournament lasts for a month, whether it's the World Cup or the Euros. The team that win it is the best in that month. Then people will then go on to say France getting beat by Turkey, they're writing France off and they should be winning those games because they're world champions. France were pretty similar, to how Portugal won it. I look at France, they have four central defenders playing in the back four. Matuidi and Kante, two of the hardest working midfielders in the competition. So that gave them a platform. They weren't going to get beat easily. They weren't going to concede goals. So I think we have to be careful when we talk about England. We talk about we have to play out the back. We have to have a philosophy. We have to have a style. Everything builds up to competing and finding form, finding momentum, which England did in the World Cup to a degree. But when I look at England in the World Cup, our strength was we were hard to score against and we were really good at set pieces. So it's finding a solution for making it work in that short burst of time, that short period of time. It would be lovely for England to win a World Cup or European Championships and be able to hold on to that title for a couple of years. But the reality is you win the World Cup, within 3-4 months you're playing games again and there might be other teams that are better than you in that period of time. But it's just about getting it right for that particular time in the tournament, which Spain haven't done in the last three tournaments now. They need to find form in a competition.
See, lots of people who like Spanish football from around the world, who most of the people who listen to us, they do like a football philosophy, I would say. Lots of people are sort of Cruyff, disciples of Johan Cruyff, in that you have a passing style. It descends from total football. You knock it around. People love Paco Jiménez's team. I enjoy it. I think it's fascinating. I think it's exciting. When it comes to my team, I might have a slightly different view on it because I can't help but think that England, it suits the best team to play like that because it's a relatively high risk. If you've got brilliant technical players, then it's less of a risk. It's not that risky when Man City do it. It wasn't risky when Pep did it at Barcelona or Bayern Munich. It's very risky if you're not brilliant technically, because we saw what happens with England. I don't want people thinking I'm a Luddite, and I just want it being lumped up the pitch. But I maybe go with England. I think you'd go a bit more Klopp than Guardiola, and just recognise that we've got pace. That's our main thing, and it were not technical ability, and you play to your strengths.
Yeah, unless we find those players, and there is a culture issue with this. In the warmer countries, they're more willing to coach in a different manner because they're not standing around with kids the freezing cold in the climate that we have in Northern Europe. My beliefs about playing at the back are just doing it when it's on and doing it with a purpose. Don't force it. Don't think that's the only way you can play. So if you want to play at the back, there's nothing better than seeing a goalkeeper come out and getting across, throwing it out to a fullback or a central defender. Ball goes quickly into midfield. Before you know it, you're in the attacking half of the pitch. Movement off the ball is good. My problem is when anybody tries to force it, and you constantly keep repeating it. So the opposition, if they've got any sense, will kind of allow the goalkeeper to throw it out to the first player and then constantly pressurise certain players in the team. You can force a player to play it to a certain player. You have a plan of how to win the ball back. And it makes it even harder if you're not technically gifted or technically used to playing that style of football. So I think that the balance is, if it's on, do it. If it's not, maybe go a bit more direct. What we see when England eventually go back to the goalkeeper, I'm not even sure Pickford's particularly great with the ball at his feet, which doesn't help the situation. When they do try to squeeze it out of the back and they're under pressure and they go back to the goalkeeper, Pickford has to kick it long, or any player, any goalkeeper in any team that plays this style, then when he kicks it long, it's futile. You're just giving the ball straight back to the opposition because you're not set up to play that long ball forward. He's just clearing it downfield, hoping for the best. Your players are spread all over the pitch, designed to try and play the ball out the back. And when it isn't played out the back and you go long, you're practically giving the ball back to the other team. So, you know, if it's getting the balance right. I don't see anything wrong when you say Klopp, his team press at the right time, they drop off at the right time. With Pep at Manchester City, they do try to play out the back. Barcelona played it out the back, but they don't do it all the time. You know, they have the sense to realise when it's the right game to do it, when it's the right moment in the game to do it. You don't want to be playing the ball to Ross Barkley. The pass to Ross Barkley was a horrible pass for him to receive. Yes, he should have passed it better. He's running back facing his own goal under pressure from a defender who's hoping that John Stones passes it to him. So he's going to snap into a challenge, put him under pressure, try and force a mistake, and that's exactly what happened. So if you've got a player like De Jong, like the Netherlands have, that's comfortable receiving the ball on the half turn, more than happy to receive it under pressure, play it off one first time passing. The amount of times you see the ball going to Busquets and he helps it round the corner, it's a big triangle from the centre back into Busquets into another midfield player. That's a plan. But they don't do it every time. Every time they get the ball, they don't think, right, the goalkeeper's not allowed to kick it out. We've got to play it out the back under any circumstances. That's ridiculous. You will not win games of football doing that. You can't be one-dimensional. So I just think it's doing the right thing at the right time. If the goalkeeper comes out and catches it and has got the chance to throw the ball out, there's nothing worse than seeing him just kick it down the field. So it's just getting the balance right. And I think then any team, if they've got more than one dimension to their game, then it makes them a better team. We've seen City, when teams want to press now, the goalkeeper, they're fortunate, well, that they had the money to spend to buy a goalkeeper that can pick a 60-yard pass out. So it's adapting to the best players you've got. With Spain, I think they would be more inclined to, if they can play out of the back, of course, but the fullbacks are pushed on. The centre-backs have got Busquets to pass into. But you know what? If it's not on, I think they're quite happy to be a little bit more direct. So it's not as obvious in terms of that they're not as defined as when they were under Aragonés and Del Bosque at the start of it all, when, you know, they even had the games, the tournament, the second European Championships without centre-forward. So that's when they dominated passing. So it's slightly changed, but it's evolving. And I think with the Spanish national team, it's going in the right direction. But we won't know until the European Championships in 2020.
Right. We said we'd show you the money. And I think we should talk transfers. Should we do that? We'll have a little break and then we'll come back and have a look at the transfers. And that, of course, means one club at the moment in La Liga.
Hi. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome back. Well, we've been speculating about who Real Madrid would sign, and it turns out most of them is the answer to that. They've piled in, haven't they, Real Madrid? It's what the fans wanted. It's what they've got. Might not be finished. Well, I tell you what, one thing isn't finished. The outward can't surely have finished when you go through a list of who they got. So, Eden Hazard is coming to La Liga. Hooray. Loved him as a Chelsea player. I think he's a fantastic, entertaining, superb player. Jovic is coming. Jovic scored a goal tonight in the international for Serbia. 60 million euros. Scored lots of goals this season. So, yeah, exciting signings. Militao is a defender. Rodrigo is a youngster, probably more for the future. I paid a lot of money for him. They're linked with a left-back, Mendy as well. And then a whole other list of players. So they're still being linked with Eriksen. They're still being linked with Pogba. They're still being linked with Mbappe. They've got a huge list of players in that. You know, if he wants to play three in that attacking midfield line, he's got about 10 to choose from, Terry. So what do you want to say? Do you want to say the outs first, or do you want to do a minute on welcoming the players in?
Oh, definitely. I think Hazard in particular is the one that excites most people that are regular watchers of La Liga to see him in genuine world class. I hear that bandied about so often. And I think we're all guilty of exaggerating players' ability at times. I think there should be a sliding scale of, okay, does a job, good, very good, fantastic, great, world class at the top of it. But we have so many players that would just jump straight through to world class. But Hazard undoubtedly is world class. Sensational signing for Real Madrid, and it's pleasing to see that they've. 5 years on after James Rodriguez, I know it hasn't worked out particularly well for him and Real Madrid, but it's been 5 years since we have had what they call a genuine Galactico at Real Madrid. So I can't wait to see him playing next season in La Liga and playing for Real Madrid.
Right, so then let's go for the out. So one out in particular, first of all, Ahmed wants to know, I don't understand why Madrid are trying hard to sell James when he's clearly better than Isco and Eriksen up front. Pogba, I understand, because he can fit into a midfield three, but James could be handy as a right winger. It would seem that they're trying to get rid of James. They need to balance these books somehow, don't they? I know they've got a lot of money coming in. I know it's a very wealthy football club with fans all over the world and all of that. But, you know, just in terms of lockers in the dressing room and pegs for people to hang their coats on, they need to get rid of some of these players, don't they? So, where are the outs going to be, and how many more ins can you see happening?
I've got a, there's an interesting graphic on S where it's got the an 11 in position. So if you imagine the graphic on a pitch with one with the goalkeeper, the back four, they've got midfield three and a front three, and they've got players' names by each graphic. So for instance, goalkeepers, Courtois, Lucas Zidane, Lunin, who they signed and who went on loan to Leganes, I think, and Keylor Navas. So there's four goalkeepers in total. So like Ramos, Militao, Vallejo as one side of the centre of defence, Varane and Nacho on the other side. So two, five centre-backs. They've got four left-backs down. Marcelo, Mendy if he comes in, Reguilón, Teo Hernandez. Holding midfield players, Casemiro, Fede Valverde, Marcos Llorente, and as a blast from the past, Lucas Silva, who was signed forever ago, still is a Real Madrid player and is due back at the Bernabeu. Carvajal and Odriozola are the right backs. They then have got Kroos, Isco, Ceballos and Kovacic for one midfield position, and they've got Modric, Eriksen or Pogba on the graphic. On the right side of attack, this is Barmy. On the right side of attack, Asensio, Vasquez, Lucas Vasquez, Martin Odegaard.
Oh, right.
He's coming back. James Rodriguez. On the left, Hazard, Vinicius, Brahim Diaz, Gareth Bale. And centre forwards, Benzema, Rodrigo, who's the new 40, 50 million euro signing, teenager from Brazil. 60 million Jovic, Mariano Diaz, Raul de Thomas and Borja Mayoral. So there's obvious ones to sell, but are they going to raise the funds to back up the issue they're going to clearly have with financial fair play? So I would imagine they'll be looking at decent money for Keylor Navas. They're looking for big money for Gareth Bale. They're looking for big money for James Rodriguez. Then maybe Ceballos, Kovacic, decent money. Will they get their money back on Teo Hernandez? Reguilón's going to go out on loan, but you don't need either of those if you're going to have Marcelo and Mendy. Will you let Vallejo go? I'm not sure he'll command the money that will help them back up the financial fair play issue. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, this is on if they sign Eriksen or Pogba as well. So it'd be interesting to see what they can raise for the likes of Ceballos, Marcos Llorente, Mariano Diaz, Real de Thomas, Mayoral. It's going to be an interesting market, but I hope they've got a plan. But I'm not sure. I like the plan of the players they're bringing in, but I'm not sure the plan is going to work because clubs are going to know that they have to sell and they can't hold out for the best prices. They have to, there's going to be some bargains to be had from Real Madrid this summer, that's for sure. So Gareth Bale will be the perfect example. He'll wait around to the very last moment before he has to make a decision to stay at Real Madrid, see what happens, see how it plays out. Or, a club in the Premier League, I would imagine, will be hoping they can get him dirt cheap with Real Madrid paying the majority of his wages, maybe even a loan. But that doesn't help Real Madrid with their financial fair play issue, which is clearly going to be there. But the amount, how much are we talking about at the moment? I'm looking at
260 million, I think they've spent. Yeah.
Yep. And then with an Eriksen or a Pogba coming in as well, then I've no idea what the figure that would be. 260, you'd be pushing 400 million, aren't you?
Yeah, they don't need Eriksen, do they? I know he's got a bit public, hasn't he? He's got a bit early, I thought, Eriksen. Because they you look at that list, I like Eriksen, but they don't need him.
No, I think this is my point about them having a plan. Where did they think they needed? The disastrous season, did it need completely ripping up and starting again? Probably not, if I'm looking at the quality of players available. Are there too many players there that don't really contribute enough in terms of they don't get picked on a regular basis that they could have moved on? So I don't think they're a million miles away from probably what they needed. What they need is a new outlook. They need new motivation for the players. The players need to stand up and be counted. The likes of Modric and Kroos, who didn't have great seasons. Casemiro has proved he can do it in the past. I think Marcos Llorente is a player that should have been kept on as good competition for the holding midfield position. even Jovic, I have reservations about how quick they've jumped in. Because I compare Jovic to Mariano Diaz in the fact that Mariano Diaz got a similar amount of goals when he went on to Lyon. And Jovic has done the same with Eintracht Frankfurt. It's one season. And, you know, if you look at the achievements of Jovic and Mariano Diaz in their one season where they've hit the headlines, there's not a lot of difference. But Mariano Diaz came back to Real Madrid and has barely played. So it's interesting that how they've... I understand their urgency in terms of bringing in new players. They have to. I hope they've got a plan and we're not going to see 38 players all jostling for position on the team bus when it travels from Real Madrid to Getafe or them to get cabs or a minibus. It's going to be interesting to see how they resolve it. I mean, those days are gone now where Real Madrid could buy all those players, keep all the players that they can't get rid of. And, you know, just hope that someone come in and took them. Now there are other issues involved to stop clubs spending 400 million without bringing any money in. So clubs have fallen foul of it. It is working to a degree. If that's the rules, then people have to abide by it. There can't be any exceptions. So somehow Real Madrid have got to sell these players and the money, we all think, is going to come from the bigger names. But it appears they're going to be staying. So how they're going to do it, I've no idea at the moment. But I know we don't have to worry about that. We can just look forward to Hazard coming in, Jovic. I haven't seen much of Mendy. If Pogba comes in, let's see how that plays out. Eriksen comes in for big money, let's see how that plays out. Militao, don't know an awful lot about him until he plays in La Liga. So it's nothing, you know, I'm not going to worry all summer about Real Madrid. Can they raise the cash? And, you know, Vinicius burst onto the scene last season. Rodrigo, the young Brazilian, might be a similar player. So there's lots to look forward to, and it's Real Madrid's problem to deal with through the summer. So the fact they're making changes makes it an exciting period for us to see them. We need a title race, don't we? So we need Real Madrid to be better, and we need that excitement of the two or three teams at the top battling it out and, you know, being dramatic. We've missed the drama in the last couple of seasons.
It's like early days of Championship Manager, isn't it? When you can sign all the players you wanted to and never had to sell anybody. But those days are gone. And it's interesting. It's the order of business. We applaud clubs that sign early. It does give you this problem, doesn't it? Because you think, oh, just get them in early. The fans love it. It seems sensible. The manager can work with the players. So there's lots of things in favour of it. And when we get transfer deadline day, particularly in England, not so much in the last couple of years, but before that, when loads of business have been done at the last minute, and everyone's very baffled by it, you think, well, this is a bit silly. But there is some sense in waiting to get Hazard in and get someone out before you do the next bit of business, which they might be doing, of course. They might be ready to go with Pogba or Eriksen or something, and are just just need to get someone out the other way. Shall we have a look at, because there has been other business, hasn't there, around Sevilla, unsurprisingly, Sevilla is the other team that's done a bit of business. Unsurprisingly, not the big names that Real Madrid have dealt with. Dabur, who's an Israeli striker, who's come from Red Bull Salzburg. And then a couple of central defenders in Diego Carlos and Max Vober. And at the same time, Lopetegui is it, which we haven't, I don't think we've had a long conversation about that, have we, Terry? So, funnily enough, all changing at Sevilla.
Yeah, I always look forward to the new players that Sevilla bring in because Monchi's involved again now. So I only know very little about everything. The one thing I know is that Diego Carlos, the centre-back, the one that was kicked by the referee playing in Ligue 1, I think. There was an incident a few years ago where he bumped into him, knocked the referee over, and as he went down, the referee had a retaliatory kick at him. So that's the only thing I know about him. Lopetegui, I like any manager that takes over a new club in La Liga, I don't ignore what they've done in the past. And I think managers do improve as they go along, as they change jobs. Ruby's a good example of that. I'm sure we'll talk briefly about him as well. Lopetegui, my issue is I'm not convinced he's been a success at club level yet.
No, definitely.
Long enough to get these jobs. Very fortunate to get the Real Madrid job. We've talked about Spain in the podcast, this podcast, doing well and finding it pretty routine in the qualifying stages, where they do look good, and we didn't know how he would have fared in the World Cup. That was bizarre how that all happened. But we learned more about Lopetegui then. We didn't get a chance to learn about him at Real Madrid, if I'm being perfectly honest. Huge thrashing against Barcelona meant he was going to leave, and it was so short. We never really got to know. So I understand from the Sevilla supporters, which I've seen on social media, not particularly in love with the choice. But, you know, let's see how it goes. People have a good opinion of him in the game as a coach. It's important someone works with Munchie and has the trust to is able to trust the director of football to bring in the right players, work with the right players in terms of quality. That's something we underestimate in terms of how important a role the coach and director of football role is, that they do agree on pretty much everything that happens in terms of players coming in, players going out. So I'm open-minded. I'm far from convinced, but I don't want to be sitting here 4 or 5 games into the season when Sevilla have won all 5 and people are saying to me, you said he was the wrong choice. I don't know. I'm open-minded at the moment. I don't know enough about him.
Well, let's do Betis, shall we? Because Ruby's come in as the new coach. They're also changing sporting director, aren't they? So it's always an interesting dynamic at a club, isn't it? It's another club that, in my view, has generally had too much change in recent years. So you're hoping for stability, not expecting stability, and you're hoping that Ruby can recreate. You know, he's had a couple of very successful seasons. So, you know that's... there's another one. Let's see where they go.
An example, John, of a manager improving. Likewise, Abelardo, who's linked with a job, he's improved under different jobs he's had. Ruby, if you'd have asked me, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I wasn't particularly impressed. But there's no denying he's done outstanding work as manager of Espanyol. Espanyol finishing in a Europa League spot is a fantastic achievement. So, again, I'm open-minded. Here we're working, with all due respect to the Espanyol players who finished higher in the league than Betis, with all due respect to them, Betis underachieved. Betis have better players than Espanyol. So let's see how he plays. What's his style going to be? How's he going to make the most of a really talented squad of players? He might be helped as well by the fact that Lo Celso might be flipped, if you want to use a term, where they were able to get him on loan from PSG. Immediately could see he could play. They had a clause to buy him for 20 million euros, I think it was. And now they're going to be looking to sell him on for at least 3 times that amount. So that money will be available to bring in players. They had a good squad, big squad. I don't think it needs too much work done to it. We all know the issue. They need to turn possession into chances. Maybe a striker might help, a proven striker. But I don't think there's an awful lot wrong. Surprised to see Lorenzo Serra Ferreira leave Betis. And as you said, I hope it isn't too much change again in one summer, because that club needs a little bit of stability.
And David Gallego has gone in at Espanyol, where he's been before, and actually did a good job as a caretaker coach there before. But it's a tough job for them, isn't it? You know, they exceeded expectations by finishing 7th. They must be training soon to start the season again in a couple of weeks' time. And there's no evidence of a vast amount of transfer business. You're not going to suddenly find a load of money for one Europa League campaign, are you? So it's going to be a tough old campaign for them.
Yep, and maybe I hope the Chinese owners of the club. Bringing Wuley in was a masterstroke. I think it was a novelty signing, if I'm being honest, and he turned out to be a game changer for Espanyol. So looking forward to seeing him. Maybe, hopefully, the investors, the owners of the club will put some more money into it in terms of bringing in players. The question is, the big issue is they need more players than what they currently have. They have a thriving youth system, so I expect to see more players coming through from their youth system. But the issue is going to be the extra games, 6 games to qualify for the group stages, a ridiculous amount of games to compete in. We saw Sevilla suffered last year, to put it shortly, with a bigger squad, a club that's used to playing in Europe. So that's Espanyol, Gallego is certainly going to need some help in terms of the numbers. Otherwise, it could put a real strain on Espanyol. They've punched above their weight this season. We saw Burnley in the Premier League last season. It took them half a season to recover from playing early in the extra games, and they didn't make it to the group stages. So it's a big test for a club that doesn't very often play Europa League, European football. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out.
And Asier Garitano is the new man at Alaves. So four managerial changes made already, and you know, it might not be end there, of course. But so yeah, we'll see. It's another. I mean, I know people. If you want a definitive version of what's going to happen next season, you're not getting it at the moment, are you? But he's a solid manager, isn't he, Garitano? Sort of suits Alaves in a way.
Yep, I agree. I just hope he's not as negative as we've seen in the past. Leganés was an outstanding job. Real Sociedad, he wasn't able to progress with better players. So I'm hoping that he's not going to be too negative with Alaves. They have a style that the crowd like, that is successful. So it's going to be, yeah, again, open-minded on that one. He might come in, learn from his previous experience at Real Sociedad, have a different dynamic, a different outlook. So we'll wait and see how that one pans out then.
My apologies to our regular contributors. I didn't put out the call because we changed the time of recording to make sure that we weren't able to talk about the Spain game. But I've still got some questions anyway from people who just send them in speculatively. Rafa says, does Spain need to better organise? It's a good start to any tweet, that one. The lower divisions. whatever it is. Yes, it is. And then says, I mean, the Segunda finished and they still have to play the playoff. Yeah, one of them now. So it's the 11th of June. Surely, national duty as for the third team. Three of 120 teams get promoted after a rather complicated playoff system. Good to see Racing Santander out of that level. Right then. And then his question is, who'd you like to see come back? Malaga, Albacete, Mallorca or Deportivo? And of course, Granada, Osasuna, congratulations to them because they are already up.
Yep, no, it's a testimony to Granada and Osasuna who have recovered quite quickly from the shambles that they were a couple of seasons ago. Mm-hmm. They've been in that group of teams the last couple of years where I've criticised and moaned about being absolutely diabolical and not getting anywhere near staying in the division. So for them to recover as quickly as they have is great work, and congratulations to them. I think Osasuna's home record, two draws and the rest were wins this season, which is hence the reason why they're going up. So they've gone up in some style. And Osasuna was always a good watch, to be honest, because tight ground, great atmosphere. They have had a decent team in the past. The season they went down was awful. And I'm hoping that we're going to see that. It used to be in La Liga, not long ago, that was a tough fixture, wasn't it, for any of them. So Barcelona, Real Madrid, they all had troubles. It wasn't always easy playing in that stadium. So it's good to see those two back. Granada bring a good atmosphere to La Liga as well. I have no preference with the other four, I've got to be honest. I look at Mallorca. Salva Sevilla was amongst the scorers in a recent game. It's always fascinating to see who's still knocking about, who's prolonging their career, who's, you know, Malaga have kept a lot of their players from the team that went down. They bring a good atmosphere to La Liga. Albacete, I recently watched the Albacete-Malaga game, which was a tough game. Malaga were the winners in the end. Ontiveros scoring a spectacular goal in that game, so he's still playing well. And the Albacete Stadium, it looked good. It was full up because it was a big game. So they'll bring a good atmosphere. Depor are regular contributors to La Liga. You know, champions back in 2000, wasn't it? So I have no preference with any of those that come up this season. I kept making a reference point this season about Valladolid, how well they've done, how well any team does that comes up in the playoffs. Last year, I used the reference point that was when Spain played Portugal in the World Cup. That was, I think, Valladolid's playoff win in the final was a day before or a day after.
Right, yeah.
So it's, again, this season, it's going to be probably mid-June again, late June, where we're going to know who the winners are. They'll start the season. How do you work a transfer market out when you don't know until mid-late June which division you're going to be playing in? So for any team to survive, finishing their season that late, it's a remarkable achievement in the case of Valladolid this season. They started off, didn't they? They lost Jaime Mata on a free transfer. The first game of the season, they didn't have a single striker. They brought a couple in on loan. It was still a work in progress when they brought Sergio Guardiola in the winter window. And they finally somehow scrambled over the line. So it's tough going for any of those four to survive next season, but they'll all be a good addition to the top division again.
I'm going to say Malaga. No offence to the others, but I'd like to see Malaga back at the top level. Right, one last question, and it's a tricky one. It's Pete who's enjoying asking tricky questions. He says, knowing what we know now about Xavi and Iniesta's ability, if you were a manager choosing just one of them for 10 years of football in their prime, who would you choose?
Oh, God. I was hoping that wasn't going to go that way. Oh, God. That is like choosing between my son and my daughter.
So who would you choose between your son and your daughter?
Xavi or Iniesta. I've changed my mind four times already since I nearly blurted out an answer. I can't do it. I really can't. Could you? I nearly went Iniesta immediately. I thought, it's Xavi. No, it's Iniesta. No, it's Xavi. I can't. I refuse to choose.
So I sort of my instinct was Xavi. And then you instantly move on and think, oh, no, you can't say no to Iniesta. I mean, that's ridiculous. So, it's interesting. Maybe people...
Tricky question.
Be forced to answer. In fact, let's stick this on Twitter, shall we? Force people to give them no their options.
Yeah, that's a whole new level today. Messi or Ronaldo, this is a whole new level.
Yeah,
Xavi
or
Iniesta. God,
because the Messi and Ronaldo, the camps are set, aren't they? You know. Yeah. You've got your this man is, you cheer for. This is
Barcelona or neutrals.
Yeah.
And it's Oh, God. Good luck with that.
The nasty one, Pete. Well, thank you very much. Right, Terry, we're going to meet up this week, aren't we? Because we're going to record a special about the Seville derby. So Betis and Sevilla. Exactly when you get that, I don't know, because we'll have to sort of edit it. And our guest, who's Colin Miller, is finalising his book that's coming out on it shortly, so later this year. So we're going to have a chat to Colin about his book. But we'll be back with these regular updates. And we will have a look at the Women's World Cup. And we will... check out Spain. They've played one game. They beat South Africa, who are ranked outsiders. So we'll have another look and just give it a few games to try and pick up some momentum and have a good look at that as well. So we'll get on to that. There'll be more transfer business to come. We'll be talking about Sevilla and Betis in depth as well at some point this summer. And we'll see you for more podcasts. So, keep listening. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
About Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
There's
still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.